These are IMC Krems International Business Students on Air.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Corinna Hirscher.
And I'm Teuta Kaitazi.
We are both master students at the IMC FH Krems, studying international business and economic diplomacy. And today we are going to talk about the economics of charity, philanthropy, giving, and altruism. Now, what does this mean exactly? In short, we will be discussing why companies, no matter their size, engage in charitable behavior, whether or not customers actually care if they do. We will be discussing the phenomenon of greenwashing, the stakeholders that are affected by CSR efforts, and also whether or not there can be such a thing as too much CSR. In order to give this podcast a practical angle, we have here with us today co-founder of the Circular Economy Forum Austria, founder of CSR and Communication Consulting, and academic program director in sustainability and responsible management, as well as sustainable finance, Karin Huberheim. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Hello, Corinna. Hello, too.
Maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself, about the work that you do.
Thank you for the invitation. Obviously, I've been into CSR and sustainability in all kinds of directions, from teaching to consulting to activism with the Circular Economy Forum. I'm very dedicated to this topic. I've got three children. This may be one of the reasons. But I've always been into that, even in my master thesis, which has been a long time ago, like 1993. My master thesis was on socially conscious advertising, which was a term that was not known then, and I had to invent it. But I wanted to know what it is behind, what companies are doing behind great advertising campaigns for the environment and for social issues. So I always like to look behind the curtain.
Thank you very much. That's very interesting. It's great to have you here. So basically, when it comes to engaging in charitable behavior, as well as CSR in general, naturally, when companies engage in it, it polishes up their image a little bit. However, Ms. Huberheim, given that you have many years of international experience as well, in this particular field, would you say that those efforts are mainly, let's say, publicity stunts in order to just gain more profit? Or do you think that there are more altruistic, more philanthropic intentions behind it coming from the company?
I would say being a good person, being a good citizen as a company is a very, very deeply rooted psychological aspect of everyone's personality. I think no one, not even Lord Voldemort, would think of himself as being a vicious person is the goal of his life. I think everyone thinks that they are doing good, and they want to be seen as a doing good person. It's just the way that humans work, and organizations consist of humans. So whoever is within an organization is still a human, still. And the leaders of organizations are humans. So the ones who take the decisions for what do we do with the money that we made, in what way ever, how can we do, can we reinvest, yes, into business? But then there is this little bit that we still have left over, or that we would like to have over to donate or sponsor or give this to whatever, make the world a better place. Build a library, build a hospital, build a road, or do something that serves society.
Actually, that was a very good keyword. If you have something left over that you then donate. There's been this very famous article that was published in the New York Times, which was about Milton Friedman and his views on CSR. You probably noticed just for our listeners, he states that CSR is either a way to increase profit or it is a conflict of interest between shareholders and a manager who chooses to spend the shareholders' money in order to buy social goods that could actually be provided by the shareholders themselves more efficiently if they choose to. So in his view, the only social responsibility that a business has is to increase profits, and its only responsibility is to its shareholders. What is your response to this?
At his time, Milton Friedman may have been right, because that was in the 70s. Milton Friedman, already in the 70s, was an old man. So by now, the world has changed, and I can really say that shareholders have changed. shareholders are not the ones any longer who want to keep all the money themselves. Many of the shareholders that we are thinking of when we hear this word are not the old white men flying private jets and smoking a cigar, but they are rather pension funds or pension fund managers who are managing the money of citizens to make it, to keep it, to save it, or to increase it for people to retire who want to have, who had a very hard working life, and then they want to be safe when they're getting older. So this is very different from the picture that we have in our minds when we talk about those kind of shareholders. And this is exactly where a lot of the ESG drive that we currently see in investments, the environmental, to look into the environmental, social, and governance criteria of the investments, this drive really comes from large pension funds a lot, and is really strongly supported by them. And also, I have to say, like for example, in Austria, the state is a big shareholder in companies like OMV, Post. Anyhow, everyone in the ÖBAG, in the state holding, the Austrian state's holding, the state, each of us, each citizen is a shareholder, actually. So, and we want that. We want to see that companies deliver more than just profit. There is, in the 70s, this may have been the bottom line, but by now that's not the bottom line of business anymore. Yeah, I mean, of course it is the bottom line, because if you don't make profits, you're out of business actually, and you're not a business any longer. So we want to know what kind of value do they provide to society. And it's citizens, it's society as large, it's consumers, it's investors. And to a larger degree, it's investors who want to know that.
Right. So would you say that there's also some sort of pressure from society for businesses?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I definitely see this, that the role of business back in the 60s and 70s, which you cannot remember, I can, but in those days, we just came out of two world wars, actually, and all our countries had to be rebuilt and that was a terrible effort that was done by everyone. And in the 60s and 70s, we started to recover, and consumerism started to grow. And in that time, yes, it was business to make profit, because when they pay their taxes and when they create workplaces, this was good for everyone. But today, that's not enough any longer. Paying taxes, we all know that some don't or don't pay enough by now. And creating workplaces, yeah, well, is it a good workplace? Am I paid fairly? Do I have good chances, opportunities? Is it diverse? We have questions. So this is not enough any longer. Our demands as a society, as employees, as citizens, as consumers have increased. So this is something that companies have to respond to.
Okay, well, you actually touched upon a lot of points, but we're going to start breaking them down a little bit. So the next topic would be more about the whole picture of stakeholders that are around CSR activities. And because a lot of theory actually states that CSR has this potential for positive relationships between productivity and living standards for all of them. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. And I always like to again bring this to the individual level, because it's better to imagine. Will you have a better life, be more successful, have better friends, have more fun in life, and achieve more if you have good relationships to the people who surround you, your teammates, your parents, your family, your friends, your boss? Or if you have bad relationships and you don't give a damn about them? I guess this is an answer that is very easy to give. Definitely good relationships make good business. You really need to realize that you will be judged by what you're doing and not by what you're saying. And this is basically stakeholder engagement.
Yeah. Okay.
It's more doing than saying and talking.
Oh, for example, there's the social identity theory, which states that employees have a better self-perception if they work for a philanthropic employer. So that would, self-explanatorily mean that they are more motivated while working, but could it also be that there's a connection between CSR activities and the talent acquisition? Well, if it is assumed that it attracts more morally motivated workers for companies.
I would say also here, and this is the point with charity, philanthropy, sponsoring, I would always recommend each and everyone, individual or organization, to do that because it makes you feel good if you can give. Giving always makes someone, makes one feel better than taking. That's absolutely not what we got taught in the past 50 years, what economy is about. Because economy, very much the narrative is taking for profit. But now that narrative has changed, create value through making profit. So if we now rethink this, still charity, philanthropy is a really good thing to do. But does it change my business? Does it change the way I'm doing business? That's the question. If this is something that comes out of my corporate culture, I'm very sure that employees will be happy to work for such a company because then it is culture. It is part of my culture to think about others, to think about beyond my business and to go that extra step. To whatever, collect trash, to plant trees, to help children, whatever it is. This is what makes the individual within the company happy and gives them sense. But if the corporate culture actually is a bad one and charity, philanthropy, whatever, is just an add-on that should make you nice, look nice on the outside, the employees will not be convinced because they know and they see you act every day and they know if this is culture or if this is just a setup for an external view.
Yeah, I actually think you touched on a lot of points again that we were going to discuss. I think one thing you mentioned is that the employees identify with the culture. Then I think in theory, we came across the term warm glow for this. We actually found out about this in terms of customers. And when they buy from this company, from a CSR company, then they experience this warm glow. But it looks like this can also happen to employees in this term.
Absolutely.
Another question that we had in terms of customers, would you say as a professional in your professional experience that customers actually care if companies engage in CSR or like that they actually adjust their buying behavior and buy more from companies who engage more in CSR than other companies?
Well, there are enough studies around to many topics, but there are of course also studies that can bring evidence that we all like to buy good because it makes us feel good. And this is something that companies, marketing can create very well, that the consumer has the feeling, oh, I'm doing good. In fact, you're just buying into something good and you're giving the company money or whatever, so that they can look good. But if there is a win-win on both sides, this will work.
So would you say that basically often companies use CSR just to keep and attract the ethical consumers and in that way, like maybe take advantage of the competition?
I would say that there are certainly companies around who do that. But I would always think that this is very silly of a company to do because corporate sustainability and responsibility as a management concept, as a strategy, can do so much more for companies than just attract consumers because I'm doing a nice advertising campaign that has some green issues and I do some cause-related marketing and every product has 10 cents or 50 cents or whatever going into a project. That's a really, really easy, quick win that I would not even recommend to every company, but only to the ones who already have a good reputation. If you don't have a good reputation, then that won't work anyway because people will think, oh, you're just doing greenwashing and you just want to look nice. So this is really something that has to be considered based on how are you perceived? What have you done? What is your record? What is your reputation as a company and not what is your image? because image and reputation, different things. Mm-hmm. Image, I can create myself. Reputation is what others say about me due to my acting.
The next topic we actually want to touch upon is greenwashing.
Yeah, greenwashing can actually be defined as a practice which is followed by organizations in which unsubstantiated or misleading claims are made of the environmental or social attributes that either their products have, the services that they provide have, or the company as a brand in general. And greenwashing as a practice is adopted to make a company look more environmentally friendly than they actually are by spending more time, more money, and more effort on making the products seem green rather than actually minimizing the adverse impact that they have on the environment. So we talked earlier about the pressure that society can have on companies in order to follow more or to engage more in CSR. Would you say that this pressure, this societal pressure, actually drives some companies into greenwashing?
Yes, I would think so. I would definitely think so. And greenwashing is the most easiest way out that can be applied because greenwashing does not touch any processes, any structures in the company. It does not transform the culture. It does not do anything strategic to the company. Greenwashing is something that is merely marketing on a very, very unsubstantial, superficial level of what is conceived or what marketing thinks that the consumer conceives as green. And very often the consumer is underrated here because the consumer is much smarter, very often than marketing experts think. The other thing is, and I see this happening, a lot of companies really don't understand what it means to be a sustainable company, what it really will take for them to become a sustainable company. And we really, I mean, honestly, we don't have any sustainable companies. I mean, like maybe a handful globally are really sustainable. And those are the small companies. The bigger you are, the bigger your outreach is, the bigger your product range is, the larger your supply chains are, the harder it becomes. And in the past 20 years, globalization really made some companies really big. And for a lot of companies, even for the smaller ones, the supply chains became enormous and very complex. So this is to now make those very complex, large constructs or systems to green them. And greening is only one aspect of CSR. That there is no governance and no social component in just greening it. But I think greening is the first step because it's so much needed now because we all know the climate discussion, blah. But of course, social aspects, labor aspects, human rights aspects are equally important for us as a global society. But this is much harder. And for many companies, this is so complex that they can't think about anything, where to start. There are so many things we could do. What are our material or most relevant topics? What does it mean we have to build a strategy? So they start with the easy way out. And then you have, on the other hand, and then you have, let's make a product. Let's make a project. Let's make, let's donate something. Let's do something good for our employees and whatever. Let's make them run or donate blood or collect waste or something like this. So I would never say this is bad. This may be a good first step into it, but they have to have good guidance, either acquire that kind of knowledge themselves or look for guidance on how to take these first steps onto solid groundwork that needs to be done. There is a lot of homework to be done for companies, and it's not enough to just have marketing be on this position.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at the moment, there are not a lot of regulations when it comes to greenwashing, actually, in Austria and also in general. There are not a lot of regulations when it comes to that. And that's actually what we came across in literature as well, that greenwashing might be a good first step for some companies in order to go genuinely green. So is that something that you would agree with, this statement?
I would agree with, so far, up to now, there was not much done. But the European Commission has very strongly put this on the agenda, greenwashing. And there are several laws already, directives, European directives that have to be translated into national law. Mm-hmm. And they are already. And by now, there are already this has happened already. And by now, if you're an NGO or an individual, you can take a company to court for green claims. That's the Green Claim Directive or Green Claim strategy of the EU Commission. Actually, companies now, when they claim their footprint is small or they are climate neutral or net zero, they can be taken to court if this is wrong. And there are also punishments up to 2 million euros or 4% of the annual turnover, which hurts.
That
I think is going to be a game changer.
I didn't know that. That's very interesting. It totally makes sense because it borders on fraud, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
It definitely makes sense.
Yeah. And this, I mean, it's not called fraud yet. It's called green claims.
Yeah.
But it's very, you know, it's touching the issue now.
Yeah,
but there was some cases with makeup saying, oh, we don't test on animals, but turning out they do test on animals.
Well, the thing, I happen to know this, we're not testing animals issue. The thing is, we're not testing animals here in Europe for products sold in Europe. Because in Europe, it's by law, this is a law, no testing on animals. But for products sold in China, we test on animals because China has that regulation that you can only enter the market with a product that is tested on animals. So for a globally operating beauty company, for example, it is not possible to have this as a global statement. And this is something that they had, like, that they did not take, or that consumers were aggravated, and rightfully so, because it was not explained in the right way. It would have needed more explanation. Now, marketing is not the position to explain things.
But I feel like that's the case with a lot of cases of greenwashing because, I mean, people are just not informing themselves enough and companies make use of those loopholes.
Or companies don't have a tradition in explaining themselves. Yeah. I mean, we have this tradition out of stakeholder engagement and stakeholder management, but a lot of companies don't have that stakeholder model in their head. They think about customers and they think about owners, shareholders, and employees. That's it. And that's not the whole range of stakeholders. And that doesn't mean that you understand your stakeholders and their expectations, because so far this system has been going inside out from the company to the stakeholders. There is no tradition in listening to the stakeholders, knowing and analyzing their expectations, knowing what the context of the stakeholder is to create those expectations. Mm-hmm. And this has to build up. It's slowly or now starting to build up. But there is definitely way more room to go for a lot of companies.
Yeah, there is.
So we're coming to an end. So just one last concluding point. So as we mentioned earlier, can there actually be such a thing as too much CSR? Some academics even claim that pure altruism would imply a negative effect on the profits. So what we're actually trying to find out from you right now is there an optimal level of CSR? What do you think? And if there is, what would it maybe be?
Well, if you ask me, I would go with Liberace. I don't know if you know him, Google him. Because Liberace's motto was, too much of a good thing is wonderful. Yeah. So I can only say, if you're a responsible, sustainably working company and really dedicated to what you are doing, you have the superpower of creating a better future for many, many others. Is this a bad thing? Can there be too many of those companies? Can there be too many of those individuals who want to create a better future? I don't think so, personally. Can others think that something can be too much? yes, because I think those will always be the ones who always think they don't have enough of something. Mostly those are people who think material. They don't have enough money. They don't have enough material goods. They don't have enough friends. They don't have enough clothes. I think, yes, there are a lot of people around like this, and so are companies. But basically the ones who are living in a mindset of abundance and are looking into the future for more than just themselves, I would say, no, there is no way you are not doing, you're doing too much. We're all doing not enough, basically.
Okay. Well,
very good answer. Thank you.
Thank you. That was our podcast episode on the economics of charity, philanthropy, giving, and altruism. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and thank you very much for listening. And thank you very much, Karin Hubenheim, for your expertise.
Thank you very much to you, but thank you very much, Corinna, for the invitation. Really enjoyed the conversation.